Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
It is Six Rings and Football Things. We are back with another Patriot Prospect podcast where we'll be focusing on the defensive side of the ball yet again. We got the edge rushers in. Now we're looking at cornerback, which I think Mike Cadlick and Chris Scheim joining me, Andy Jumbo Hart. I think, boys, that cornerback is a, I don't know, we overuse the word sneaky, but sneaky need because, yes, you have Christian Gonzalez. He of his Hall of Fame status after 3.5 games played in the National Football League.
He's going to look so good in that red jacket.
Yeah, he is. Yep, just book him now. Absolutely, book him now. But after
he'll get in before Parcells.
That's probably actually a safe bet.
Yeah, right.
Odds out, it's probably a safe bet. Yep. But after that, I think you have questionable depth. Jack Jones obviously was seen as, for a period of time, maybe the counterpart to Gonzalez, and now he's elsewhere. You have some of the little guys in Jonathan Jones, the slot guy veteran. Then you have Marcus Jones, the slot guy young player. There's been talk of adding the likes of Stephon Gilmore, one of these veterans this offseason. But as of right now, Mike Cadlick, you know, I still think cornerback kind of a house of cards. You could still add some depth there because obviously you need at least three that's starting caliber in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you need to pretty much go five deep between injuries and sub packages. And they're not really there right now. So how much do you guys prioritize and or would you even consider? Because I feel like we've all accepted quarterback, tackle, wide receiver are the needs and like bang, bang, bang. But if there's an elite corner on the board at 34, would you swing there? If there's an elite corner in the third, like where would you guys at least consider swinging for a cornerback that maybe surprises you with his availability?
Yeah. So I think for me, I would absolutely swing in the second round. Like I think that there is a weird divide in this cornerback class. I think like half of them, or at least the top half or the top portion is really good. Like, I think there's a lot of talented players that do a lot of different things. So depending on what kind of corner you're looking for, I think you could add really good depth to the lineup you currently have. And you can get those guys right in the second round. I think there's a perfect spot for that. If you trade out of three and you get a second pick late in the first round, like that 23, I don't think taking a swing there is awful at all either. So I think anywhere in that back half of the first round throughout the rest of the draft is fine taking a swing at corner. Cause I think you're right. I think it is a legit need. Yeah. You technically have your starters, but as we saw last year, injuries happen all the time and one guy goes down and you're starting Sean Wade and then you're screwed. Yep. And so for me, like, there's a very real chance that they feel more comfortable with the offensive line as it currently is than they do with the corners, or at least their ability to mold deeper round talent at offensive line than they do at cornerback. And so I think that cornerback in the second, third round seems very plausible to me.
Yeah. Andy, you said sneaky. I don't even think it's a sneaky need. I think it's a straight up need. Like, again, we talked about this position last year and it was one of the sort of three tentpole needs. And now today they just lost Miles Bryant. He's signing with the Texans. So yep. And not, again, not that he was going to make or break the entire room, but it's another depth piece that they now don't have obviously in the room. And so, yeah, like you're looking at it last year and you add Christian Gonzalez, but Marcus Jones goes down. And then obviously, like you said, Jack Jones, and then the thing slowly crumbled. And right now you look at the starters, quote unquote, but you know, you'd rather Jonathan Jones play in the slot. You'd rather Marcus Jones be a depth piece and not a starter. You'd rather have someone solidified on the outside. You don't really have that right now. So yeah, I'm with you, Shime. I think, again, that if they do like trade out of three and they get some more capital in the back half of the round, or even if they trade up, I'm good as early as, like you said, the back half of the first round. A lot of guys, like you said, who are versatile, they can play inside, outside, and everywhere between. So like, you know, you can grab a guy and he can, you know, really obviously be a franchise changer in the future. So yeah, it's a need, and they're going to have to go with it in the top 100 picks. I think that's going to be critical for them.
Yeah. For me, I think I prioritize quarterback and tackle. And then after that, to me, it's similar to wide receiver. Yeah, I have bodies that I can get by with, but I still need to add to the group at both positions and probably add a higher end type player. And then it gets down to value, availability, how I work the draft. You know, was there a run and I got to take the last corner that I like while there's still wide receivers I can get later, blah, blah, blah. So I think we're all in sort of a agreement there that it's a need. It's an absolute need. And especially it's the NFL. Every freaking week, we're going to do the rundown of like the receivers you face, and not just one, but two. And I mean, hell, you got Miami twice a year where you got to cover those guys. And if you put Marte Mapu out there, it doesn't end up working out well for you. So let's not do that again. Live and learn. Plus, maybe if there's a tiebreaker or a collaborative debate, Gerard Mayo goes, well, I coach defense, so let's go get a corner. You know, yeah, as simple as that. Okay. So I agree with Shime. I think there's some really good cornerbacks in this draft. And I was actually just in the bathroom. I don't know why you want to know that.
Where the best thoughts come. So,
and I was thinking,
I'm excited for this.
Has cornerback become a sneaky, safe pick? I feel like more and more corners that are taken like in the first round are just good. Like there's a little history here of first round corners. And certainly last year, I think there's a history of that. I think Witherspoon out in Seattle, Christian Gonzalez for his 3.5 games played here was good. Like, I feel like everybody likes to throw out tackle as like a safe position in the first round. I actually don't think it's all that safe. I think corner is sneaky. I'm going to use that word again, sneakily becoming a safer type position.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at the last 2 years alone, 5 of 6 are legitimate starting cornerback hits.
Right.
2 years ago in that draft, Derek Stingley, who was injured, but then came on awesome last year. Sauce Gardner's a stud, as we all know. And then Trent McDuffie in that pick that, you know, the Patriots right. could have used. And then last year, the really only one that wasn't good was Emmanuel Forbes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he weighed
4 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. He was flat Stanley. Like, he's just going to blow away in the wind.
Right.
And we kind of knew that going into the draft, which is why we were so confused as to why the Commanders took him where they did. So,
okay, so
I think it makes sense.
In light of that, you have a combination of factors that probably drive this position up. And that's A, everybody drafts receivers. And if everybody's going to draft receivers, you need to draft people to cover said receivers. You need to try and keep things in balance. And B, guys are coming in. And again, this is my theory. It's totally unresearched and I can't prove anything to deal with it. But I think the advent
of theory.
Yeah, it's a bathroom theory, but like these 7-on-7 cultures and camps create cornerbacks and wide receivers that are ready to play. Like, this is what they do.
They're the most athletic players coming out. Like, the best athletes right now are coming out at receiver, corner, and quarterback.
Like, and you know why? Because those are the 7-on-7 teams that run around all spring and summer long all over the country, like AAU basketball teams.
Yep. So, and that's why, too, so many teams are struggling along the offensive line right now, too. Like you said, tackle is
that's fine. You only have to do that for like another 10 or 15 years, and then there won't be linemen. It's going to be flag football. We're taking more and more steps.
It will always
in that
be
direction.
Linemen.
No, but I mean, you said, too, like tackle used to be a safe pick. I mean, I guess it kind of is now, but you know, as a whole, the offensive line is struggling, and I think you can, you can credit that to the 7-on-7.
Okay. So I'm going to throw a guy out there who I just flat out love. Because I think there are upside corners at the top of this draft that could fall in line with some of those other guys, starters, high end players, Pro Bowl caliber, whatever. Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, I think is an absolute effing stud in the making. 6 foot, 195 pounds, which to me is like It's become the perfect corner because you get taller than that. And we say, oh, he's a little long. He's too slow. Do I move him to free safety? You get shorter than that. You're like, oh, he can't win matchups with bigger receivers. I think he has the size. 4.33. Anybody like that's plenty fast enough. I watched him and I do like up arrows for certain things, down arrows for certain things. I don't believe I gave him a down arrow for anything. He runs, he hits, he's a playmaker, he's aggressive, he's a tackler. Like, I don't see anything to not like about his game. He had 5 interceptions last year. Some of these guys you see like, oh, maybe lack of production is a question mark. How come he doesn't have picks? Nope. He's got the picks, All-American. Dude, at 190-something, even playing my side of the street, did 20 reps in the bench press. Half these guys can't get that off their chest. Like, maybe I'm missing something, but Quinyon Mitchell, to me, is the next in line of those first-round corners you're talking about that in 2 years, kids are buying his jersey because he's one of the best players on his defense.
Yeah, and I think the first question a lot of people would ask is, well, he went to Toledo. Did he really play anybody good? But Sauce Gardner went to Cincinnati. Yep. Like, it's at this point, if you're really good at corner, you can be really good in the NFL. And I think Quinyon has all of the traits you need to be successful. He's insanely athletic. He has exceptional field vision. I think he's much better zone corner than he is a man corner, but that doesn't mean he isn't going to be physical because the man wants to come up and tackle. There's a reason his name has exploded since the Senior Bowl and it continues to rise. I would not be shocked if he's corner one. And honestly, I would be stunned if he's not corner, like if he's lower than corner two. To me, he's either one or two.
Yeah, I love him. I'm with you guys. There's no real flaws. I sort of compare him and another corner in this class to the top two corners in last year's class. And like, I see Quinyon Mitchell as like the Devin Witherspoon of this class where, you know, he does everything right. He's more aggressive. He doesn't like, he can tackle, he can do everything. I was reading up on some scouting reports on him too the other day, Charles Davis, who I can't stand as an announcer, but he's pretty good on everything other than when he's on the CBS broadcast, called him an apex predator. And like, I think that's just a perfect thing for him. Like he's aggressive.
He's a hunter.
He's a hunter, but he's not like, he doesn't get lost. Like some guys will go hunting and then get, you know, absolutely twist their feet over each other and fall down. And the guy's going 80 yards for a touchdown. Like,
and sometimes they'll see red and they'll just tunnel vision. Bingo. And he doesn't tunnel vision.
Nope. Yeah, so I love him. I think he's my cornerback one. He's athletic. He's smart with his aggressiveness, and I think that's exactly what you need to play cornerback in the NFL. So
okay, so next on my list in that world is a guy who I think some people question as a safety, but Kamari Lassiter out of Georgia to me is another aggressive. One of the things I really like watching on tape, and this is probably a stupid thing, but in this world of NFL and McDaniels and all these offenses, is what they do on any of these screen passes. And the guys that play it like Troy Polamalu would play it, and that's just shoot themselves towards the general direction of chaos and like choosing violence, as they say, I love. I think Lassiter does that. 6 foot, 188, only one career interception. So you read some things and it's like, hey, how come only one interception? So some of that pops up. Definitely physical in an angry sense. The playmaking in that sense is there. But again, why didn't he get his hands on more footballs is sort of like that question. I don't really give a rat's ass, quite honestly. I see a guy that is around the football. And I just think sometimes maybe that's a luck of the draw. And if you're around the football often enough and you're physical often enough, whether they're interceptions, fumbles, forced fumbles, those types of things, you're going to create plays for your defense. And I see a guy in Lassiter who is a playmaker, a defensive playmaker that you want as one of your 11. Now, the other question will always be like, oh, he's on the Georgia defense and Georgia always has good defensive players. Yeah, I don't see that as a question. I actually see that as a positive. Georgia always has good defensive players. They come in well coached. They come in ready to contribute to an NFL defense. So I like Lassiter as an aggressive physical guy more than a pure cover guy.
Yeah, I don't love Lassiter. I like him. People are going to knock him big for that 40 time. He just 4.65 is slow.
It is.
And it shows
I look for football players, not track stars.
Sure, but I think it also matters. And I think I one of the reasons I think it matters is because I think sometimes he can get a little grabby. I really like the way he plays the boundary. Like I love the way he defends the perimeter. It reminds me a lot of like Richard Sherman-y kind of on the outside the numbers. But I think over the middle of the field, it becomes tough. So covering a guy like a Ja'Marr Chase or a Justin Jefferson immediately becomes a problem to me. And I foresee a lot of defensive holding penalties. And so for me, he's a guy that needs to come in and he's going to match up with that classic big, tall, you know, outside the numbers receiver, which is great and usable and definitely valuable. But I think he still has a lot to work on to kind of smooth out the rest of his game.
Unless you can get faster, you're going to be playing safety in the NFL. Like if you're running a 4.64, I'm sorry. Like you said, Sean, you're going to just get grabby and you're going to have to make up for the speed. And so if you can't run with these guys, then you're not going to be able to play corner. So I'm with you. I like Lassiter as far as like you said, Andy, one of 11, a guy who's, you know, played in big games, played at Georgia. But I mean, unless you can, and sometimes you can't fix speed. Sometimes you're just a little bit slower than everybody else. And so
true. If you don't do that, speed, then stupid, all those things you can't
exactly. fix. Can't fix all three of those. So,
yeah. So the other end of that spectrum is 4.28.
Yep.
You can't teach speed. You can't fix speed, but you can't teach speed. We're on the can't teach speed with Nate Wiggins out of Clemson, 6'1", 173. So certainly has the length, a little bit more of a lanky corner, but the reality is whether you're Al Davis or Bill Belichick, when you are just studying and you see 4.2s come across at receiver and corner, you notice the guy. 2-year player for them, 3 career interceptions, 2 of which were touchdowns. So obviously when he gets the ball, he sees end zone because he's the fastest guy on the field. So he should think end zone every time he touches the football. But he's definitely a playmaker. You know what I liked about him is I think some of those 4.2 type guys tend to not be hustlers. He seems like a high motor guy. And usually you think of high motor guys as the 4.6s because they realize if they ever shut their motor down a little bit, they're going to embarrass themselves and not be on the field. He's a 4.2 high motor guy. And I think that's a combination that can lead to greatness, that want to be good with the ability to actually be good. And as you guys said, the speed is just you either have it or you don't. And he has it, and you mix that with that mentality. So I think he's a high, high, high-end NFL cover corner prospect.
I love Nate Wiggins. I have just like two primary concerns with him. I think ultimately he is solid across the board, whether it's zone coverage, man coverage, speed, playmaker, all of it. I think he has it. My biggest issue is I don't love the weight. I just don't love the size when it comes to weight. Like I'm on Awaken. I would want to put him on the 3 stacks of pancakes diet. Like I need to get some muscle on this kid. I need to get some meat on this kid's bones. And tied into that, I don't love how he fights at the line of scrimmage. Like he's really good at man coverage when he's off the line, but if you press cover him, he's much less successful, and I think he's going to lose a lot of battles with stronger NFL receivers. And so I think those two kind of go hand in hand. I want to get him in the gym. I want to get him with my strength and conditioning coaches, and I want to put some pounds on this boy. But man, like I'm not worried about anything else. Like I know the kid can play. I know that the talent is there, the drive is there, the ability, the speed. Like I think he can be a very successful NFL corner.
So continuing with and this isn't the one I was talking about earlier, but if you continue with the comparison to last year's class, my number one corner, Quinion Mitchell, compare him to Devin Witherspoon. Wiggins is my number 3 corner, and I'll compare him. And we'll get to number 2 in the Christian Gonzalez comp. But Wiggins, like you said, Sean, with the weight, it reminds me of Emmanuel Forbes, a guy who's fast. He's a playmaker. Wiggins is a little bit taller than Forbes, but a fast playmaker who needs to put on some weight. But I like the high motor too, like you said, Andy, because it's a guy who play well, high motor, but then if you get lost and you get caught up, you can make up for it with your speed and you can still go get the guy. And so I like Wiggins too. The weight is a little bit of concern, just like it was for Forbes, but again, no real complaints in his game. And it's the opposite of what we just said with Lassiter. If you're fast, you can play on my team. We can find a spot for you one way or another. So I like Wiggins as well.
I just get nervous that he's going to get mauled in the run game. Like
you
on those early downs, like you're facing a team like Detroit. Like I think he could get bullied. And like, that's the one thing that worries me is I love the way he plays. When it comes to aggressiveness and tackling, it's not always there to stop the run. And just like, I just think of some of these athletic tackles and guards pulling, they're going to crush him. And like, great, you're fast. You have to be quick and you have to be agile and you have to be smart with how you tackle in the run game. And I just don't know if it's quite there yet. I think it's coachable and I think he can get there, but I don't know if it's there quite yet.
Well, and yeah, if you put on weight, then you could, you put on weight though, then you could get slower and then you play differently because you're playing at a different speed. And then that, you know, that can screw you all up as well.
So. But we're also picking nits, as my friend John Rook would say. Like, we're talking about top corners and you're also talking about matchups and, you know, how many teams are going to play like the Lions and how many teams are going to, you know, and as a coordinator or even what division you're in, you know, talking to assistant coaches and scouts over the years, that's a legit. If you play two certain types of teams in your division and say, well, we start the year with four games against that, that can be a make or a break.
If I'm in the AFC East, like, I'm salivating to get Nate Wiggins. None of these teams are power run teams. They're all throwing the ball. You look at the Jets, the Bills, and the Dolphins all want to toss the ball around the yard. Like, Nate Wiggins is the perfect kind of corner you want against a team like Miami.
Right. Or like the Richard Sherman. Somebody brought Richard Sherman up earlier.
Yeah.
Like, Richard Sherman couldn't play everywhere for everybody, but he found the right place to play. Or actually the right place to play found him because they were good at their job and scouted and drafted and developed that way. So I think that that's some of that goes into here. Okay. I'm intrigued by Cadlick. I want Cadlick to go next and know who his cornerback two Christian Gonzalez is in this year's draft.
I have an idea.
One Terrion Arnold from Alabama. He is he's smooth. He has the hips. He can move. He's like a glove on defenders. He never gets beat. It's rare. The only, I guess, gripe with him, just like it was with Christian Gonzalez, is he's not a great tackler. And that can sub. And Gonzalez fixed it. And I don't know if he fixed it. Maybe we all, obviously, we keep touting the 3.5 games. We didn't really see it a lot with him. But the tackling wasn't a concern for Gonzalez, so perhaps it's not a concern for Arnold at the next level. But again, that, like, you rarely see him get beat. He's like a glove. He's smooth. He understands the game. I think that's huge for corners. Like, some guys are aggressive and cocky and smart and – or, sorry, cocky, aggressive, and maybe not that smart and don't understand the game, then they just want to, you know, smack a guy around and just, like, shove him in the ground, where you need smarts with your corner, and that's what I see in Arnold. Understands the game, understands where wide receivers are going to go. So that's my Christian Gonzalez comp, is Alabama's Terrion Arnold.
Yeah, I like Arnold. I think he wants to beat you up, especially in man coverage. I think he could be a little grabby. I think he could be a little over-aggressive. But I can deal with a guy being over-aggressive, especially on defense. Like, that's a position of the field. I'm like, okay, like, I can deal with you getting a penalty every once in a while if you're making plays because of your aggressiveness. And so, like, yeah, I think it could be a problem. But for a guy like a Jerod Mayo, since, you know, we're in New England, I think he would be a good fit. I think that's something Mayo could coach out of him and help him and really kind of hone a skill like that. Like, that's he has like it all. I think there's some struggles in zone coverage. Fine. It's really just the aggressiveness and the grabbiness. And that's like the one issue I would have with him.
Yeah. I wrote the same. It's funny because I think he locks guys up and he is physical at the line. Yeah. And then sometimes it turns into grabbiness over the middle, grabbiness down the field, which I also think is kind of a common thing because I think you get away with that a lot more in college. Yeah.
But like, it worked for a guy like Brandon Browner. Like, granted, not a super long time, but it worked.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it worked for a longer time. Now, different time, but Ty Law was one of the grabbiest corners in the history of football, and it got him to Canton. So, yeah. And I also think that's a natural, there are certain things that are natural, like, oh, his route tree as a receiver. Well, yeah, they usually get by running fewer routes and they're going to be asked to do more as a professional. And on the defensive side, they're going to be asked to be less grabby. It's a different game. It's a more ticky tacky game. I'm not quite as high on him as you are. I don't think he has quite the ceiling of a Gonzalez, going back to last year and how I felt about Christian Gonzalez coming out. He's a good player. I definitely think coming out of the Nick Saban defense, you're NFL ready. You're a heady NFL caliber player. I'm not sure he has elite upside. I think he has I don't want to say journeyman, but like two team NFL career where you're like, he's a good corner and he's been a good corner for a long time. I'm not sure we'll be mentioning him in the Sauce Gardner or whoever the debate du jour is of top corners.
Can I toss a guy out? We've gone too long. This is insane. I'm kind of upset about it, to be honest with you. We need to talk about Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, it was coming.
He He's my number two
corner. Figures Boston. They want to talk about the white guy.
Yeah, no, but like that's the thing. I think this is a case, and it's a certain scenario.
Jason Seahorn called. He wants his son back.
In every NFL draft, there are just like there's inherent stereotypes, inherent biases that happen with players and analysts, and I think Cooper DeJean unfortunately suffers from one of those. And like, dude, this kid can do everything. Mm-hmm. He has the perfect frame that I want in a corner that's going to be physical and be able to tackle. He can cover in man. He can cover in zone. He has exceptional ball tracking skills. He is an insane athlete. Like, I don't see things wrong with Cooper DeJean. I get it. Like, there's a lot of people out there that are like, yeah, they're going to have to move him to safety. Why? Why? You watch him play corner.
Right.
Watch him play corner, and he is tremendous. He is excellent. He's disciplined. He's not like he just looks natural out there. I don't get the hate. I love Cooper DeJean. Cooper DeJean should be the second or third corner off the board.
Okay, I clearly don't like him as much as you. I do think safety is a consideration. I also think we're in a world where it's starting to be a little less position. You know, it's like, can he play defense? And, I know you asked the Chargers, what does Derwin James play? I don't know. He plays defense for us. And on any given play or any given week or any given matchup, we ask him to do certain things in sort of the back end umbrella of the defense. And I think Cooper DeJean is in that world where if you define him as just a pure, he's our number one corner, which means he faces Tyreek Hill, followed by, I think he might be miscast in that role. If you say, he's one of our top four defensive players, including one of our top one or two defensive backs, I think you're fine with that. I think there is going to be a little creativity because I do think he can do it all in a sense. Yeah. I don't know that he can cover absolutely every NFL receiver man to man each week. You know what I mean?
So, sure, but how many guys can?
And like 100%. But that's like what we're talking about if you're going to be the first or second cornerback off the board or if you're a top 15 player overall, blue chip player, like that's where you're really like separating the men from the boys. Cause I do think he's a fun football player to watch. I also think this is just a total side podcast. So if you say Lamar Jackson should go to receiver, you're a racist. If you say Cooper DeJean should go to safety, you're not a racist. Like to me, it's the same thing. You see a player, and yes, there is race involved because it's just inherently we see black and we see white. We have
eyes. Well, it's also just statistics, like how the position has gone for the last X amount of years. Like aren't any white cornerbacks.
Right. I mean, there's been stories written about it. Where is the white cornerback gone? Mm-hmm. Like the whole thing. But I feel like no one will get mad if Chris Scheim says Cooper DeJean should go to safety.
Right.
Whereas if you say it about Lamar, like it blackballed, what's his name? The Bill Polian. Like people legitimately think he's just a flat out racist because he had the audacity to say the fastest skinny guy on the field should play receiver. To me, that's almost football 101. It's like the fast skinny guy plays receiver. We've been doing this for a long time.
And I also wonder too how much the injury impacts his draft stock. And not that a broken fibula is going to ruin your draft stock, but people aren't talking about it as much because we didn't really see him in the second half of the year.
Right.
But
he also didn't perform at the combine. So
exactly. Like, so he hasn't done
some
much.
Questions. Sure.
So people like, have questions about Mitchell, whether you can play corner and they don't have a 40 to slap alongside to say, 100%. Suck on that bitch.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's part of this. If he runs a 40 and the Shimes of the world have a 4.41 to look at or something, they go, I don't see why he can't. I watched him play. He can play. Right. He just ran the stupid speed you needed him to run, but you don't have that number.
Well, so like I think the last known 40 for him was about a 4.5 on the dot. And so like if he was to run at like a pro day or something and ran under a 4.5, immediately it's all the ammo in the world to be like, why wouldn't he just play corner?
Absolutely. Agreed. But that's part of the grayness, I think. That's funny. Black, white, gray. The grayness of his pre-draft stock. So I would put him with my boy Lassiter a little bit. I think there's going to be defensive coaches that get him, whether they fell in love with him, didn't fall in love with him. It's the famous phrase that Bill Belichick used about my guy who no one knows. I bet you Cadillac's never even heard this name. Maybe.
Here we go.
Played safety for the Patriots in the early 2000s from Fresno State. Can you answer who it is, Cadillac?
Not yet, no.
His first name is James.
Nope.
James Sanders. underrated.
Oh, yeah, okay. I know the name, but I didn't know he went to Fresno. Okay.
And Bill Belichick said famously, or maybe not so famously, I love James Sanders. He was my James Devlin of the time on the defensive side of the ball. And he said famously, he's a player you like a lot more when you get him than when you were thinking about getting him. And this is a higher end example, but I think both those guys, DeJean and Lassiter, the coaches that may have had debates over what can he play? Oh, his 40's too slow. Oh, he's white, whatever. Then they get him and they're like, damn, thank you, coach. Thank you, scouts. I now have a football player. So we'll see. We'll see, though, if he is a true, because, I mean, there's not a lot of white corners that are around in the National Football League. That's just reality. And if he's lining up there all the time, he'll be a fun story. Okay.
He can return punts, too, and play some special teams.
He can. And he's got some explosion in that area, so that should help him in Shime's world. If he's an explosive athlete, don't look down your nose on him because he's white.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go back to Alabama for Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid McKinstry, 6 foot, 199. 3 year player for them, only 2 career interceptions, bunch of pass defenses, returns punts. First word I used for him was feisty. He's a feisty type corner. I actually like him as a potential Patriot because I think he's a number 2 corner in the NFL. And you already used your pick on Christian Gonzalez. And I think he has the size, the ability. The speed is a little bit questionable, but again, if I'm drafting him knowing he's my second corner, I have my tentpole corner in Christian Gonzalez. I like Kool-Aid more than if I'm drafting him with the hopes that he's going to be my number one corner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think the Patriots in general, at least historically, and maybe this is a Belichick thing, I guess we'll find out, have liked SEC defenders. Like, they love the way they communicate, they will love the way they play, the style, and especially Alabama Saban guys. Like, it's just always the way it's been, and I don't think it's a bad route. And with a guy like Kool-Aid, I think there was some disappointment in the fact that, like, after – you know, 2 seasons ago, there was a lot more hype around him than there was necessarily after this year. I think Therrien kind of stepped right in front and was like, hey, I'm CB1 here. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a lot to like about the way Kool-Aid plays and his ability. I think you're right, Andy. I think CB2 is a great idea. And so the back end of the first round, beginning of the second round to me is just the right spot for Kool-Aid, which is exactly where the Patriots happen to have a pick. So I would not be shocked if they had their eyes on Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I am 100% serious when I say it like this, and it sounds silly, but the nickname Kool-Aid hurts him a bit. I think, now hear me out, because I think when we saw that he committed to Alabama however many years ago, he went viral and it was Kool-Aid McKinstry. He goes by Kool-Aid. Everybody loves the name Kool-Aid, and it's like he's going to be this stud and he's good. And he is very good, but he's not, like you guys are saying, he's not CB1. He's not going to be a top 5 pick. And it's like, he's a great player. And, you know, is that silly to say? Kind of. But I think everybody knows who he is because of the nickname Kool-Aid McKinstry on Alabama. And he's just a really good football player. But like you guys are saying, who might be a cornerback too. But like, again, I have no real gripes about him. The foot injury concern, I don't know. But again, you see what happens. He had to kind of stop at the combine, but like versatile, can play inside, outside. He's aggressive. I like feisty, like you said, Andy. And I think he just gets how to play the game. I think that's, you mentioned it, Shime, with the communication in the SEC, and like these guys just, they're pro ready. They understand the game really well. They teach them well and they pick it up well. That's why they're top defenders coming out of college. And so I like him a lot. And I don't remember his original first name, but maybe going
Jaquincy.
By Jaquincy in the pros might help him out a little bit.
Perfect. But we got a Quincy Mass. He's a Jaquincy. Yeah, exactly. It'll all work for us. Opposite end of the spectrum. So, like, you're right. Kool-Aid was sort of a known thing.
Yeah.
Arriving at Alabama. So, this is a guy that I didn't know anything about until I started doing these breakdowns and watching tape and different things. Enos Rakestraw Jr.
Ennis.
There's 2 Ennis in his name. Ennis Rakestraw Jr. 5'11", 183, 4'5", 3-year player for Missouri. Only 1 career interception, but he has 3 career forced fumbles. And I think that is symbolic of who he is, because this is the guy that I wrote complete defensive back. I think this guy can do everything you want him to do in your defense. Now, he did have a torn ACL a couple years ago, and I know we always talk about that. which I'm not really sure why, because I feel like in this day and age, everybody tears their ACL. It's almost like the Tommy John thing. He got it out of the way. He already tore his ACL, so maybe he's less due to have one in the NFL, and I don't have to miss him for a year. I don't think he's the greatest athlete. That's why I don't think he's a higher prospect, but feisty, heady around the ball. He passed my screen. How do you deal with screens test perfectly? Because he does aggressive things, comes up physical. He can play in the slot. You know, he's one of those sort of modern DBs. So I'm not saying as a first round pick, and I'm not saying he's going to be a star for you, but Ennis Rakestraw, which seems like, by the way, a racist last name, but we don't need to get into that road. From Missouri, I like as a do it all defensive back.
I really like Ennis Rakestraw. I think he to me, Andy, is like my Devin Witherspoon comp without the athleticism. Like, it's, he has that snarl. He's Absolutely. Really smart. He knows how to play. He'll hit you. He'll come up and tackle. He's not afraid to get into it in the run game or in the screen game, which I really, really like. And I think is a valuable asset to have. He's physical, which I like, but you're right. The concern is the not top tier athleticism. He ran a lot slower at the 40 than you kind of had hoped he would. And so that is a concern, but overall, like, again, another late first round, early second round guy that is just going to come in, and he could be corner two tomorrow, and he's going to be physical and hitting people for you, which is great.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I go back to the, you know, the Arnold and the Kool-Aid stuff, like, just SEC defenders just get it. They just know how to play, and you see it on film. Andy, we talked about it with the when we were reacting to Mayo's press conference, where when you're watching Jaden Daniels, you see these guys, they just get it. Like, you just – they just understand the game, and not that they understand it more or less than anybody else really, but it's just, it looks so much more pro ready when you watch these guys in that conference. And so, yeah, I'm a fan. He's a guy who, like you said, wasn't too familiar with him until the process. But when you go and look at his tape, like, it's a guy who flew under the radar and, you know, has a lot, you know, a lot to like as a defender. So,
okay. So we're coming up on 35 minutes here, talking cornerbacks here on Six Rings and Football Things, the Pats prospect preview pod. Now I'm just going to ask you guys to, we'll start going around the room a little bit here, the digital room, throw one or two more out as we wrap this up. I'll let Mike Cadlick go first and see a name that he either really likes or really dislikes that we haven't touched on.
I am going to throw in Mikey St. Ristol, a local kid from Everett. Michigan. Love
yes,
him.
Sir.
We talked about him, Andy, a few times on the pod because I had him in a mock draft. We talked about him at the Senior Bowl. He was going to perform before he decided to pull out, but just a playmaker, an athlete. He played on the offensive side of the ball for a few seasons and then moved over to defense and was a stud this year. I like guys who can do that because they understand offense. They understand how receivers want to move, and they can then flip that to the defensive side of the ball and how they play. So I love St. Ristol. I think he could sneaky be a Patriot. Not sneaky, because we don't want to use the word sneaky anymore, but he could be a Patriots pick on day two. And then hate the last name, but I love Cam Hart from Notre Dame. played a lot of he's boundary corner, played a lot of games at Notre Dame. He's another one who's smart and just sort of, I keep using gets at his corner because I think you really have to be smart to play the position. So I like how smart he is and how instinctual he is on the outside. So like Cam Hart and Mikey St. Ristol.
Yeah, the guy I want to bring to the table is another very similar to Ennis Rakestraw. That's TJ Tampa. This is another guy I think could fit very well in the New England Patriots system. You're going to get him in the late second, early third round. He's a physical guy, real physical guy. 6'1", he's got that good height. He's long. I really like the way he plays. He's going to add a physical presence, man. He is going to beat you up. And I wouldn't be shocked if some teams consider him to be a guy that they might even want to move to safety. I get it. But for me, TJ Tampa is a good tackling corner, physical corner, that I think would pair well with guys like, you know, Christian Gonzalez and Marcus Jones and Jonathan Jones. He adds a different kind of element that you don't necessarily have in New England. And I think TJ Tampa is a great value where he's going to get drafted for what you would need.
Okay. First of all, just I actually don't love Cam Hart. I think he's a candidate to move to safety. Okay. I think there's some concern. You watch, like, when guys run comebacks, you can run him off and he slows down like I slow down. The fellow Hart, like, takes two or three steps before I can stop and get moving the other direction, which I think could be problematic against some of, again, matchups, because he's a bigger corner, you know, 200 pounds, 6'3", has the size to be a safety. So I think he can play in the NFL. I'm not sure he's like a starting caliber corner, and he might be more of a chess piece. Apparently, I didn't watch any Missouri games because I also found out that Chris Abrams Drain, the other corner on Missouri, 5'11", 179, so a little undersized in terms of the weight there, and ran a 4.44 40. I'm not saying he's a number one or even a number two corner, but he's got 3 years, 7 interceptions. Watched him a lot against Malik Nabers, who I am not the biggest fan of, but I know people think he could be the first wide receiver in this class, maybe is explosive. He more than held his own. And that, to me, that's an NFL receiver. You talk about the SEC, like, part of it is there's just NFL talent there. So when you go from covering Malik Nabers to go to covering, I don't know, Jamar Chase, you're just covering two former freaking LSU stars that are now in the NFL kind of thing. So Chris Abrams Drain, the skinniness on the outside, he's going to get thrown around a little bit. Again, we talk about this, you know, get him on an NFL weight program. And I don't mean steroids. I just mean like whey protein in the weight room and put on another 5 or 10 pounds maybe. But he's a guy, again, that I knew nothing about. And apparently they got two pretty good defensive backs in the Missouri roster coming into the league this year. Anybody else that anybody wants to throw out there? I know Cadlick, you didn't bring up Max Melton. I think you had him going to the Patriots in one of these, right?
Yeah, that was going to be next. Rutgers guy, Max Melton, 3-year starter, 8 picks. We talked about it a little bit, but 6 foot, like at one time might have felt a little small for the position, but then you mentioned it earlier too. Like you get any taller than that and then you're just too long and then you can't move as well. So I like him. The other one I like is Chosmith Wade from Washington State. He made, I think he had a pick 6 in the Senior Bowl. He's another one who's a playmaker, 5'11", played on the boundary most of his career. So I like those two as well, Melton and Chosmith Wade.
The last guy I have for you here, Jarvis Brownlee Jr. Out of Louisville. I don't love him, but I also don't hate him. He's like one of those guys that I think you could take a late round stab on and could provide some, you know, help to your team down the road. I think he's really quick. He has that kind of burst that would help when you're playing, you know, slot corner. The Patriots don't necessarily need slot corner. I think that's something that they have a couple guys that can fill that role. So Brownlee may not fit their specific need, but I think when it comes to NFL slot corner, Brownlee could slide right in right away and kind of evolve as he goes. He's not necessarily the perfect size and everything like that, but I think he's quick. I think he has really good punch at the line of scrimmage, which I think is really helpful when you're playing in those slot against those smaller, shiftier guys. And so I think Brownlee could have some success.
So the last guy I'm going to bring up, DJ James out of Auburn. He actually did the reverse Bo Nix. He was at Oregon and went to Auburn for the second part of his career. He is an interesting guy because we've been talking a lot about this weight, and I don't know if Emmanuel Forbes and some of these guys, Tank Dell's, like size doesn't matter as much, but he's a guy that was listed originally at 6'1", 164, which is pretty lanky. Now when he measured in, it was 6'0", 175, which is still pretty lanky, but he's going in the right direction. He got an inch shorter and he put on a little bulk. 4.42 40 guy. I think he's probably a backup corner in the NFL. He's definitely not physical. He's definitely going to have guys that just push him around. Like, I don't want him matched up against freaking DK Metcalf or some of these guys in the NFL, but he can just flat out run with people, mirror them, cover. And that's what I'm looking for, very simply, in backup or later round defensive backs. And I think he's a guy that has competed at a high level and can hold his own. And again, I'm not taking him in the first round. Emmanuel Forbes, I wouldn't have taken in the first round last year.
Correct.
But if I'm looking for a depth defensive back in the middle of the draft, I think you can do worse than DJ James. So that's a bunch of names we've run through for about 40 minutes here. We're going to do as we always do and kind of just wrap up with not necessarily who'll be a Patriot, because we're not really even sure when the Patriots might target cornerback. Could it be the first round after a trade down? Could it be as early as the second? Could hell it wait till early on day three? I don't know. We know cornerbacks. Dozens of cornerbacks get drafted every year. I think the Patriots will probably be in on that at some point. Question is when, but I do want to ask 3 years from now, when we're looking back and we're talking about cornerbacks are safer picks and they become stars more directly than some of their other position mates. Chris Scheim, who's the best cornerback in this draft?
It's Quinyon Mitchell. Like, to me, he has everything. He has the speed. He's got everything. To me, it's Quinyon Mitchell. If I'm really going to take a stab in the dark,
Cooper.
Give me Ennis Rakestraw.
Okay. I'll say Cooper DeJean then. I'll say Cooper.
I I love Cooper DeJean, but I look at some of the other talent here, and I just like, when I look at upside, I'm like, man, these guys have the potential.
I'll say Cooper because he can stick around on both positions. He can play anywhere on a defense. He is a guy who you want on your team. He can be a punt returner. He can be a special teamer. So one way or another, he'll be in the league for a long time. I don't know if he'll be the undisputed number one corner of the class, but he'll be a guy that sticks around longer than most.
And it's very possible he could go the Devin McCourty career route, who was a cornerback and then was a safety, and no one really cared because he played freaking 15 years or 12 years, whatever the hell it was, at a high-level defensive back on a good defense. So Cooper could do that. I'm going to go with Quinyon Mitchell because I just think, I don't know, I love everything about the way he plays. I don't have any doubts. Like, he would be – the word I believe Gerard Mayo was using today throughout his owners' meetings, press conference, was conviction. They want them to have conviction on free agents or draft picks. I have conviction on Mitchell that he is just going to be a great defensive back in the NFL. So that's going to do it for another Six Rings and Football Things Prospect Preview Podcast. The cornerback position from top to bottom, big and small, black and white. We covered it all here on Six Rings and Football Things, brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. And we'll be back next week with more. We're going to double dip. Next week, we're going to take two positions, a little menage a trois of offense. We're going to say running back and, ironically, tight end will be our two positions, two spots where the Patriots may not have top of depth chart needs, but probably need to fill in a little lower on the depth chart. Two positions that don't have a lot of high-end talent in this draft. Might be a little questionable where you can get certain guys, what value, but we will review the tight end and running back positions. For Mike Cadlick and Chris Scheim, I'm Andy Jumbo Hart. Six Rings and Football Things continues the march towards April 25th and the NFL Draft.